Good morning, everybody, and welcome. My name is Lynn Curry, and my pronouns are she, her, hers. I have been a member of Prairie, I think, about 11 years or so, and now just preside every once in a while. Prairie aspires to be an open-hearted and an open-minded congregation. We welcome people of every ethnic and religious background, whatever your color, sexual orientation, family structure, age, or abilities. On Sunday mornings, we provide a wide variety of services. They're presented either by a Prairie member or a member of the wider community, as is the case today. I'd like to invite Bob Park up to share our opening words.
Opening words by Ralph Marston. Make it a habit to tell people thank you. Express your appreciation sincerely and without expectation of anything in return. They appreciate those around you, and you'll soon find that many others around you truly appreciate life, and you'll find that you have more of it.
Okay, now I'd like to invite Johanna Hatch, Evan Creed, and if available, Liam and Aurora to light our chalice today.
The chalice lighting is by Eric A. Heller Wagner. Blessed is the fire that burns deep in the soul. It is the flame of the human spirit touched into being by the mystery of life. It is the fire of reason, the fire of compassion, the fire of community, the fire of justice, the fire of faith. It is the fire of love burning deep in the human heart, the divine glow in every life.
Thank you, guys. Okay, I am honored to introduce our speaker for the day. Dina Rimashevsky is the clinical educator social worker for a Grace Hospice Care, a not-for-profit hospice based in Fitchburg that serves South Central Wisconsin and North Central Illinois. Dina has a bachelor's degree in Spanish with an emphasis in Hispanic health and human services and a master's degree in social work. Since then, she's had the opportunity to work with diverse populations in Milwaukee and Madison and surrounding areas, and has experience working with the elderly, physically disabled, and terminally ill, and their grieving families. In her current role, Dina develops education on a wide range of topics that relate to psychosocial considerations at the end of life. She presents to the Grace staff, as well as, obviously, the local community, in terms of members and providers. So welcome. Help join me in welcoming Dina.
Thank you all so much for having me here. I'm so excited to be here. This is my first time presenting on a Sunday ever in my life. So I'm really thankful that I can be here. Also, this. You guys are so welcoming, so thank you so much for the warm welcome and the music and just the sharing. You can really feel the community here, and that's so wonderful. My topic today is on grief and self-care, and this is a topic that's near and dear to my heart. Working at a Grace, I often get on stage and I talk about advanced directives because I'm the social worker, and so that's what they have me talk about. But grief is so important, and it's often overlooked. And I think it's something that we need to take some time and really understand it a little bit better. And we're always learning, and as I go through this, you'll see that. We're always learning more. There's not a one-way-fits-all approach to it, but I would like to give some education and some guidance on what I think are kind of best practices around grief. We're all good. Thank you. So often we think that grief is going to be a straight line. Something bad happens and then we just have to get through it. But it's kind of a jumble as we work our way through it. And there's no easy way to get through that jumble except to get through that jumble. There's not an easy fix. Grief is it describes the feelings that we have when we have experience, that we experience as we anticipate or suffer a loss. Now, it does not have to necessarily be a death. Grief is something that we can experience when we lose or even change something in our life, because change is loss. It can be really exciting, but it's also a form of loss. And we can grieve losing our home or moving to a new home, not getting our favorite parking spot in the morning, relationships and family, family members, as things change and grow, as we maybe add more people into our family, expand what that means, or maybe as people move away, just through the natural progression of life, it's really exciting, but it can also be a form of grief and a form of loss. Job and employment, we can move from one job to another, and that can be really exciting, and it could still be a loss. We could retire, and it's really exciting, but it's also a loss, because we are changing something that's so integral to our day-to-day life. And, of course, losing a person through death. Loss it's not a one-and-done sort of thing. It piles on top of each other. As we experience more and more changes in our life, if we don't deal with those losses, they just kind of stack up until we've got this pyramid of loss on us. And because of that, grief is often compounded. I hear frequently, when I was a direct practitioner, I heard frequently from my patients and their families of, it's silly. It's silly. I was doing okay. I was doing good. And then the garbage disposal stopped working, and I was just fit to be tied. Or the cat had kittens, and it was like I was mourning. I was crying so hard, I was so sad, but I was excited for those kittens. This is normal. But it can feel abnormal. It can sometimes feel like we're going crazy, but that's not the case at all. So grief, basics, it lasts longer than what people think, and especially in our society. I don't know about you, and Grace is a great place to work, but our bereavement for close family members, and of course it's just close family members, that have passed or have died, is 3 days. We get 3 days of paid bereavement. Otherwise, I have to tap into my PTO, right? And I don't know of anyone else, but that's a fairly standard. I don't think I've worked anywhere in human services or in social services where I've gotten more than 3 days of bereavement pay when I've suffered a death in my family. And that's not including the death of pets, the death of my friends' family members that I was really close to. That's just my family, what society views as mine. And 3 days is not long enough to mourn someone who's no longer there. And so that's an added piece to that. It takes more energy than what you could possibly imagine when you think about it, because it is a process. We are readjusting who we are and what our life looks like, as well as mourning the loss of something so dear. And that just takes a lot of energy. And what I've heard from my patients' family members when their loved one has died was, I get up in the morning and I'm exhausted by the time 7 p.m. comes around. And I always went to bed at 11. Yeah, that's normal. That's normal. That fatigue is normal because it takes so much more energy to work through that change. The changes come and evolve over time, and what that means and what that looks like continues on far into the future. And it shows up everywhere in our life. Physically, emotionally, spiritually, financially, socially, those changes and the feelings of grief that we have, just they show up everywhere. When, as I mentioned before, because loss is compounded, and grief is compounded, when we experience a new loss or a new grief, it will stir up past losses. So when my dog died recently, I was reminded of my grandfather who died, 20 years ago? Not quite, but almost 20 years ago. And I was mourning him as if it happened just yesterday. It was my dog. It was my dog that I was mourning, but it reminded me of that relationship and reminded me of that grief, and that's also very normal. Part of that mourning process is you're not just grieving the loss of that person, but you're grieving the loss of plans for the future, expectations, hopes for the future. A dear friend of mine recently lost a family member that she wasn't close to. And she was lamenting to me that she felt as if she felt as if she was silly. Those were her words. She said, "I feel silly because I wasn't close to him, and yet I'm crying as if he was my father, as if he was my mother." Well, that's normal. It's normal to have that because you had this expectation or this hope for something that could have been in the future, and it's no longer there. And you have to process that and readjust to it. And it includes feelings that aren't just sadness. There is no right response to death. You make it up as you go along. And that's so true. And everyone grieves in a slightly different way. It's not just sadness. It's not just crying. And where people are in their grieving process, even when they're grieving a similar loss, is very different. So some people may feel shock, or you may feel some or all of these emotions. You don't just feel one emotion at a time. You can feel multiple. But shock is a common emotion that we feel when we've experienced a loss. Also denial, feeling dazed, or having a feeling of numbness or disbelief. And that's normal, and it's actually our body's way of protecting us until we can get to a point where we can emotionally and psychologically deal with that loss. So it's kind of like a natural anesthesia to put a bubble around us until we can process it. Panic, anxiety, fear, very normal feelings when we've experienced a loss. Your sense of security has been shaken, has been threatened, and you naturally feel anxious and your body goes into a fight or flight response. That's normal. Some people feel like, "I'm going crazy." No, you're mourning, and that's hard, but you're not going crazy, and this is a perfectly normal response. Feeling confused, disorganized, or searching, or like you're yearning for something that was or could have been. And this is also very normal, because that disorganization is there. The organization of our life has been threatened, has been uprooted, because someone that was in it is no longer there, and now we're having to figure out how to reintegrate them into a different role in our life. Emotional outbursts. Crying, hysterical crying, slamming doors, just feeling so angry and overwhelmed. Very normal. It's like our body's going, "I don't like this." And we're there. Our mind is there with a sign, you know, like you're at a protest, and it's saying, "This is bad. This is bad. I reject this." And that's a normal response. Relief. Relief can happen after we've experienced a loss. And it's not that it overwhelms the other feeling or we're just feeling that. But because, and this often happens with people who have lost someone due to a long illness or because they've taken on a large caregiving role, but that relief in no way diminishes or minimizes the way that we felt about the person that we have lost. But with it often comes guilt. Because if we feel that relief, we then feel guilty, like we somehow wished for this to happen. That's our way of trying to take control over a situation that we didn't have control over. And it's a normal response, but it can be a hard one. And I recommend that if you're feeling emotions that just feel out of uncomfortable, or you're not quite certain how to handle them, or if you feel that they're a little bit beyond what you can handle and you need support, to reach out for it. Because as we grieve the loss of a loved one, it's an adjustment process. We are adjusting and reconciling the physical absence to someone that we still are connected to, like that invisible string, that we still have love for, that we know loved us, and depending on how we feel, continues to. But that love is still there. We still have it. And we still want to continue to have an emotional, psychological, or spiritual relationship with that individual, even though they're physically not here. And it takes a while for us to catch up. What it can look like. So these are some symptoms physically that you can see. You can feel fear, insomnia, fear like I mentioned before, but insomnia, restlessness, mistrust, depression, headaches, fatigue, your appetite can change. There can be substance use or misuse issues. There's lack of concentration and focus, all very common with grief. It is not just sadness. So there are a multitude of research modalities out there about why grief is, what we have to do to get through it. This is the one I like the most. This is the dual process model. It was, I believe, close to the most recent model to discuss grief. And it's about helping people find a balance between facing the reality of the loss while learning to live our life after loss. It was developed in 2015 and has since been re-examined and repurposed, and the one that I'm going to look at looks both at what this looks like for an individual as well as for a family or a community. So what the purpose of this is that it's not a straight line. When Kubler-Ross came out with her stages of grief, it was very early, and she admits that it was very early, and there was everyone thought that you had to go through each one in order, that you had to have denial, and then you had to have sadness, and you just had to go through these in order. But that's not the case, and we have since come to learn that it's a back and forth, and it's not a straight line. It's that very messy line that we saw at the beginning. The dual process of grief tells us that when we're having everyday life experiences, that they serve two roles after a loss. They're either focused on the loss, or they're focused on reorienting ourselves after the loss. And it goes back and forth. And it continues to go back and forth until we have reoriented our lives to that person no longer being physically present. So for an individual, loss-oriented activities or tasks, it's all about accepting the reality of that loss. And we're focused on experiencing the pain of that grief, because experiencing the pain of that grief is important. It's how we get through it. And adjusting to life without the disease. And then emotionally relocating that role or that person within our life. So my grandfather, who died almost 20 years ago, I still think about him every day. He was a big deal for me. He was my hero. And when I think about people that are most influential in my life, Grandpa always comes up. I'm 33 years old, and my grandfather is still the first person on my list, even though he hasn't been in my life for 20 years. That is okay. That is normal, because he is there. He is still very much, that relationship is still very much important to me. It has just shifted. It has shifted. He's no longer physically here, but what I know and what I experienced between myself and my grandfather when I was growing up continues to define me to this day. And I continue to think about, well, what would Grandpa think in this situation? That's normal. When we're focused on restoring our life after that loss, it's about accepting the reality of the change. So it's not about accepting it internally, but it's accepting it externally. And we have activities and where we take time off from that pain or that grief. And we enjoy life a little bit. And that's often followed by feelings of guilt. But that is a normal thing, to take time off from our grief. We need to, in order to fully process it. Because it's a dual process. We're not just getting over the loss. We're also reorienting our life. And we're mastering our changed environment and developing new roles. Because when someone has left our life, there's often a void. They filled something for us, and we want that filled again. We need that filled. And it's figuring out how we can do that. It can be something really practical, like he always took care of the finances. Or she always managed the books. And now I've got to figure out how to do that, either for myself or finding someone else in my life that can help me with that. And that's a process. And we have to do it as a community as well. It's the same sort of things, but it, as a community when we, or as a family when we've experienced a loss, we have to go back and forth between these, this loss orientation and this restoration orientation. The problem that we come up against in the community is that a community is made up of individuals. And individuals can be at different points. Some can be at the loss, in a loss phase, some can be in a restoration phase. And so there can sometimes be conflict because we're not all processing the grief at the same in the same way. This happens, I see this all the time in families when I'm doing family bereavement counseling. Comes up all the time. I don't think he cares. Well, he does. He's just in a different place. So think, caring for ourselves and caring for others. We need to acknowledge what our own feelings are in the face of a loss and try to remain as non-judgmental as possible, both for ourselves and for the people around us. Recognize that we can never truly understand another person's journey. We all have similar things that we're trying to do, but how we express that and how we get through that is very individual. I might feel shock on a day when my husband feels joy and relief. As I mentioned, our dog recently died. And I know all of this stuff, and yesterday, I still yelled at him for a good 15 minutes for not caring about my dog. It's a normal response. But trying to be non-judgmental, and when you recognize, when you see that, and then taking the time to acknowledge, okay, yeah, Dan's not feeling this the same way that I am right now. It's not that he doesn't miss her. He's just in a different place. Grief is painful, and it's a process that cannot be rushed, and there's no magic tool to fix it. You just have to work your way through it. Be present and be mindful of your own self and your own needs, and offer or seek emotional support as you need it. Also, taking time for the normal, physical, everyday things, because as I mentioned before, grief takes longer and requires more energy than people recognize. And so it is not uncommon for people to forget to take care of them, their sleep needs, or to hydrate or eat appropriately. And so it's important to take the time to care for ourselves, be active, get outside, engage in creative processes. Those creative processes can help us work through our emotions too. Ceremony is really important. Rituals are really important for humans. And where we can put that into our life to recognize and accept that loss can be really important. So not just funerals are great. I really like them. I'm a weirdo that will go to everyone that I can because I think they're so powerful. And if you have the support of people around you, that's so important. But it's not just that. There's other small ways. Keeping a favorite blanket. Making sure that there's a place setting out for someone that's no longer present. All those little things can be important. Figuring out what rituals are and what are beneficial for you and for your families and for your community is important. And working to reach out to each other for connection and just finding what you need. Things that you can do, to some practical things to help others. Writing important things on dates on a calendar, and then acknowledging them. So birthdays, anniversaries, deaths, those can all be really beneficial for someone to just get a card in the mail that I've been thinking about you, or a phone call. Offering to accompany them to social functions, or giving them an out so that they don't have to go if they don't want to. Specify what you can help with. So often people, so sweet, they'll say, let me know if you need anything. I don't know about you, but when I'm grieving, I can't think about what I need. So what is more helpful is to say what you can help with. Let me know if I can come over and rake your leaves. Let me know if I can help with any meals. I have a great recipe for chili. Let me bring that to you. So you're offering exactly what you can and not expecting the person that's going through grief to remember what it is that, what our individual strengths are. Initiating the connection and giving them a choice rather than saying if you need anything, but also giving them a choice to step away if they don't need something. Because sometimes what people need is solitude. And call, send an email or text, just letting them know that you're thinking about them. I have resources available that I believe they're set outside. There's some online resources. If you use your Bing or Google browser, whatever one you use, you can type any of these in, and they're great resources. So I will always support our Grace Grief Support. We have great grief services available for everyone within the community, whether or not you've worked with a Grace Hospice or Palliative Care. They're available for everyone. There's also the Dougie Center. The Dougie Center is a wonderful resource. I used them when I worked as a bereavement counselor for children. And the Dougie Center is the model for helping, it is the standard for helping people or helping children through their grief. Hello Grief and GriefNet and Open to Hope are all online resources where you can reach out to other people or read articles about grief and grief-related topics. And the Compassionate Friends, they have both an online presence and a physical presence here in the Madison area where you can reach out for support. So there are some local resources for, and I have them broken out for bereaved adults, parents, children and teens, widows and widowers, and the phone numbers and how to get a hold of them. So I'm not just telling you, hey, this is here, now go figure it out, because that doesn't help. Giving the actual resource. And as well as some books. So we read The Invisible String today. I really like The Invisible String for children because it is a nice way, a gentle way to introduce the idea that even if someone's not there, we're still connected. And that can be a really gentle way to introduce the idea of loss after a death. But there are other books out there as well. And then last but not least, two of my favorite quotes. We have Winnie the Pooh and Earl Grolman, so contemporaries if nothing else. How lucky I am to have something that makes saying goodbye so hard. And grief is not a disorder or a disease or a sign of weakness. It is the emotional, physical, and spiritual necessity. The price you pay for love, the only cure for grief, is to grieve. And now, if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. However, I was introduced, at least superficially, to some of their traditions. So I'm sure we are all aware of the Day of the Dead, right? Right. So the idea of that is you are introducing, you are remembering, you set aside a day to remember the people in your life that have passed. And you physically take out images of them, you take out favorite things that they really enjoyed, so favorite foods, favorite drinks. Different things like that, and you just have it present, and the idea is to encourage that presence to come back into your life. One of the things that we have encountered at end of life, so there's a variety of traditions around whether or not you have a window open when someone has died, and we had a really well-meaning nurse once who said, I read somewhere that they like to have the window open. She's working with a Mexican family, and she went across the room, she was going to open the window for them. And the daughter almost like tackled her to get her away from the window because she wasn't wrong that having that window open is important, but that the idea after the death is to let that spirit live there with them for a little bit longer. Now, not everyone in the Hispanic culture believes the same way, but there is a much more openness to accepting that loss is part of life and that we can continue to maintain that connection past death. There are a lot of different cultural pieces out there where a lot of different cultures just really embrace and understand and approach grief very differently than we do here in the States. If you think back, I don't know if anyone else here, but I read a lot of historical novels, specifically based in England. I'm very English ancestry, and so I get really excited about that sort of thing. And the tying of the black ribbons for men when someone had died. wearing weeds, so the widow weeds, for years after a death. And then there's this gradual change. So it was like a visual representation of someone's grieving process. So they would wear black for about a year, and then they would go to gray, and then they would go to purple before they would go back to full normal colors. And it was just this, so that people looking at them could see they've experienced a loss. And we don't have that same thing here in the States. We tend to close it in. It's behind closed doors more. And I think there's something really valuable in learning from other cultures and how they do allow that in. So the Hispanic cultures and the Jewish traditions are all really great, and the Turkish traditions are all really great examples of different ways that we can incorporate that. My husband is Polish. He's first generation Polish. And he doesn't think that there's a difference, but there really is. He views it as very normal until he's actually met and sat around my family for their mourning process. But one of the things that they do, we were in Poland recently visiting family, and one of the things that they do is they keep graves decorated year-round. They're just beautiful, and there's someone responsibly. They go and they sweep, and they and his dad lives here in the States now, and his dad does the same, and he's really frustrated. He's visibly and verbally upset because people do not take the time to sweep their loved ones' graves. And so he has told Dan and I, he's like, you got to do it. Every 3 months, you got to do it. But there's different ways of approaching that, and I think there's definite value in seeing different perspectives.
Thank you so much. Our closing words today are by Alice Morse Earle and Mike Lawhern is going to come up to share them with us.
The closing words by Alice Morse Earle. Yesterday is history. Tomorrow is a mystery. Today is a gift. That is why it's called the present.
Thanks, Mike. Thank you, everyone, for coming. Please extend the hand of friendship to those around you. Be sure to greet your neighbor and join for coffee and conversation. Thank you.